the summit is what drives us, but the climb itself is what matters. Conrad Inker.
Yeah, it was, I think what amazed me is just, I feel like at that point in my life, I had a nicer backpack. I had good hiking shoes. And some people are doing it like with a water bottle in hand and like they're wearing Converses. And I'm like, how did you do this?
Like, you must have taken the train.
I know, right? Like, did you just take the helicopter to the top, get dropped off, and then you just walk down? Like, it's crazy to me. I think, and the hike up to the half, to the sub dome after you give them your permit, and then it's just so steep to get to the sub dome. I'm like, this is it, this is great, this is done. And then you look and you're like, oh boy, okay, just bottle up all those nerves and let's just go.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the Trail Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute to help us out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest, an adventurer with lots of outdoor experience. Emily Latour is a travel nurse who has really taken the travel piece to the next level. She has been all over the country experiencing the outdoors. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Emily. How's it going?
It's going good. Happy to be here.
You excited?
Yeah, I'm very excited. Nervous, but good nerves.
Good nerves. Good. It's good to be a little bit nervous. That's good.
Yeah, keeps you on your toes.
I know you've had a lot of outdoor adventures. Have you picked up a trail name along the way?
I have not, actually. Just Emily or M.
Just Emily or M. Okay.
Waiting for someone to give me a trail name.
Well, that might happen tonight. We'll see how it goes.
Sounds good.
Okay. Have you listened to the podcast before?
Yeah, I've listened to a couple episodes, my long drives.
Okay. Just want to make sure that you are aware of a segment that we do towards the end of each episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. That's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some outdoor wisdom with our listeners to make their next experience even better.
Perfect.
Okay.
The Must Bring Gear Review.
All right, Em. Another feature we've been doing this season is the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Six Moon Designs. Here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day adventure, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Em, what do you have to have out there when you're adventuring in the outdoors?
Definitely, I think I need a good pair of shoes and some decent socks. So I guess at the time, whatever shoes I have that are broken in right now, I'm using some Salomon trail runners that I really like, as well as Smartwool socks have been a kick of mine lately. That or probably like a good fitting backpack, which I recently found one that has fit in me perfectly. And that's an Osprey one, and it's been great. So those two things I think can make or break your hike.
Yeah, you got to keep the feet. Got to keep the feet happy.
Yes,
for sure. And Osprey, very popular pack. A lot of people use Osprey. Yeah,
I can see why. Yeah. I love mine. It's newer and it's been fantastic.
So, what type of adventuring do you do? Are you a section hiker, a day hiker, a through hiker?
I'm definitely a day hiker. I haven't done any overnight hikes yet. That's like one of the things I want to do this summer, start getting into that. Definitely a day hiker with usually if my base camp's like a tent or I recently got a camper or just wherever I'm living while I'm on the road for work. And I have two dogs that come with me too. So day hikes are a little bit easier with them.
What kinds of dogs?
I have a 12 and a half year old collie lab mix Cooper, and then a almost 2 year old English setter Chase.
Cooper and Chase.
Yes.
Very good.
And then we have back home where I live, we have one more dog, Muggsy, who's a lab mix and he's five. So we have a full house of dogs.
You are definitely a dog person.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the hiking pole.
All right. The next segment we do is called the hiking pole. And then that's pole with P-O-L-L, like a survey, not like the thing you hold in your hand when you're hiking. And this survey is going to help me give you a score on the sanity scale between 1 and 100. Mm-hmm. All right. With 1 being completely insane and 100 being completely sane. Where do you think you're going to fall on that scale, Em?
I think a little bit more on the sane side, I think. I haven't really done too many. I haven't done too many insane hikes or anything like that yet, I think.
Okay. So you play it pretty safe usually?
I think so, with the day hikes, and usually pretty prepared for what I'm doing. So I think I'm pretty sane, okay. I guess.
Now, I have 2 sets of questions. One set of questions is kind of designed for section hikers or through hikers. Mm-hmm. To, you know, the kind of gear and equipment and opinions on stuff out there. And I also have another set of questions that really deal with some of the big issues facing society.
Okay.
It's really, both those questions give me some insight into your personality and your way of thinking, and it enables me to give you a score. Which set of questions would you like to try?
The through hiker one, is that just through hikers and backpackers and stuff?
Yeah, it's about equipment and preferences out there on the trail.
I think we will do the society one because I haven't really through hiked or anything like that. So stick with that.
All right. I love your courage. You have no idea what you're getting yourself into. We could easily spend an entire episode on one of these questions, but we're just going to get your quick reaction, maybe a brief explanation. And that's going to help me determine, you know, what's going on up here. So, all right. Question number 1 in the hiking pole. One of the big questions. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Never. No. No.
Why not?
Because it's a fruit. It belongs in a bowl.
So no fruit on pizza?
No. No. Just fruit in bowls. That's okay. It.
No, is tomato a fruit or a vegetable?
I'm gonna go with vegetable just because of my previous.
Just to make sure your argument works. Got it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Now the scoring of this survey is completely subjective. It's whether or not I agree with you because I'm the host. And it's, you know, it's my podcast. So
I think I said that one. From your reaction.
I don't want you to tell me what you think I want to hear. Don't try and read my facial reaction or anything. Just, you know, shoot it straight with me.
Sounds good.
Okay. Question number 2. Do you roll your toilet paper over or under?
I don't pay attention, I guess, to that. It just goes on whatever way it's facing.
Hmm.
I don't know. Neither way bothers me.
Okay.
I think it's under right now. I think.
She looks like she wants to go check just to make sure.
I think it's under.
As soon as we finish tonight, we know where she's going. Yeah. Okay. All right. Question number 3. Do you use the Oxford comma?
No, because I'm bad at English. I don't even know what that is.
Okay. All right. So in a simple list, in a simple series, like if you're going to say red, white, and blue, how many commas do you use?
Do red comma, white comma, and blue.
Okay, that's the Oxford comma. That second comma before the and.
Yeah, you have to have a comma before the and. Yes.
Have to have it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make me good at English then?
That's good. Yes.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. So you know, it, you get rid of the Oxford comma, everything just starts slipping. I mean, we're talking about the end of society.
Yeah. It just turns into one quick phrase. You need to pause after every one of those things.
Okay. Question number 4, Netflix or YouTube?
Oh, Netflix.
Yeah. Netflix. And why is that? Why Netflix over YouTube?
Because YouTube for me is like how to do things and on my phone. And then Netflix I pay for on the TV and it's just separate.
Got it. And what kinds of shows are you watching on Netflix? You got any good ones that you're invested in right now?
Netflix. Well, always Grey's Anatomy. Always. That's just like that's the background show when I'm doing stuff and don't pay attention.
I mean, you're a nurse. You're a nurse. Yeah. I have a nurse in the family too. And she claimed that she could do a running whip stitch way before she went to nursing school. So
she
watched Grey's Anatomy.
After I watched the first episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you learn a very important nursing school in the very first episode, a nursing skill in the very first episode of Grey's Anatomy, though. I will say that. And I say it in my head every single day, every day. But yeah.
Well, so don't keep us in suspense. What is it?
So when they put you on, when you go come into the ER, they put you on the cardiac monitor. There's three colors, red, white, and black or gray, whatever color it is. And it's whitey righty. So white sticker goes on the right, smoke over fire. That's it.
Okay.
And they say that literally in the first episode. So you can be a nurse after the first episode of that.
There you go. It's a lot cheaper to watch, to pay for Netflix and watch Grey's Anatomy. How many seasons now? What, 18, 17?
Oh my, I don't even know. 20, I don't know. They might be in their 20s. Who knows? Yeah. It just runs.
Okay. Question number five. I think we're five.
Sure.
Question number five. Let's see here. What is your most useful skill in case of a zombie apocalypse?
I think that I can probably hide really well. I hate hide and seek, but I can probably hide really well because I don't think anything else would kill them.
Do you have much experience hiding?
No.
So why do you think you're so good at it then?
Lots of babysitting when I was younger and lots of games of hide and go seek. So, and I feel like you're just not going to win in a zombie apocalypse. So you might as well just try and ride it out somewhere.
What would be the best hiding place in the area where you currently are?
Like in this condo?
Maybe not the condo, but maybe in your community.
Oh, I was going to say, if it was in the condo, definitely maybe like up, there's a fireplace. So maybe like up the chimney, just like stay in the middle of the chimney. In the community, I mean, you can get like really, really far into the mountains. I bet there's probably some shelter in the middle of the mountains. I'm in Colorado right now. So you could probably find some shelter somewhere in the middle of the mountains.
That's probably a good approach. That's a much better approach than trying to stand up in the chimney.
Yeah, I think so. It'd probably be a lot easier too. I could probably like nap in there or something. I'm not napping in the chimney. I'll be up for weeks.
All right. Question number six. Would you rather always live 10 miles from where you were born or never be able to settle down in one place for more than a year?
That's so hard because that's like, I've been so not settled for the past year and I can't wait to go home. But I think, yeah, not being set, I would rather not be settled for more than a year.
You don't want to be tied to one place forever. You'd rather have to move around quite a bit.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely.
Okay. And question number seven, should the person in the middle seat of an airplane get both armrests?
They should not get a single armrest.
The person in the middle should not get a single armrest.
No, they should get the armrest closest to the middle, the walking path in the airplane.
Okay. So the window seat person has the window and the armrest next to the window. The person on the aisle has access to the aisle and has that armrest. Because of those benefits, is it justified for the person in the middle just to lay claim to both of those armrests on either side?
You know what? I forgot about the armrest by the window. So I think, yeah, they might get both of them. I completely take back my initial answer. They get both.
Okay. And if you're stuck in a middle seat, I mean, and you walk on the plane, you're sitting between two strangers, would you immediately stake out those armrests? I mean, would you just exert your will?
No, I don't want to be a burden. So I would just like try and make as less room. I would take up as less room as possible.
You would just give up both armrests and not have a window or the aisle and just, you know, accept that?
I think I would let, like, see what happens and let them, like, figure out what armrest they want. And if we're taken off and they haven't taken one of the armrests, I'm stealing that one.
You're a stealthy armrest stealer.
Yes.
Someone leans over to pick something up, the arm slides in.
Yep, gone. You take your hand off that armrest or your arm off that armrest, and it's mine.
It's a free game. All right. Yep. Let me take your answers. I'm going to put them through the John Freaking Mirpod algorithm. I have to do some math here, and we'll see what happens. I have to carry the 2. I'm going to divide that by √3. I'm going to multiply by pi. And we're going to adjust for the temperature currently at the top of a 14er in the Rockies, because you're in Colorado. And I come up with a solid score of 64.
Okay.
I thought it would be higher with you, truthfully.
I was 60. Sort of thinking like 60s, 70s, maybe.
Yeah,
I
don't okay.
That's sort of kind of in my wheelhouse that I thought.
All right. Would that be consistent with what your family thinks of your sanity score?
I don't think so, because I don't think they're pretty much like aware of all of the other insane things I could be doing. So what they think I do is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to them, they think I'm definitely insane. I'd probably be like a 20, but like I could step it up a few notches still, 100%.
Okay. All right. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit and let's hear about your background. Where'd you grow up? What kinds of sports and hobbies were you involved in as a kid? And how'd you get involved in outdoor adventure?
So I grew up in Massachusetts. That's where I live now. I live literally probably 10 minutes from the town I grew up in. So we grew up like camping, tenting, and we would hike like the mountains that are just around us. There's not too many huge mountains in Massachusetts. They're like 2,000-ish feet. And then like Mount Monadnock in New Hampshire. I don't know if anyone might know that. That's a little bit more well known. But just doing that and like tenting, wasn't really aware, I guess, of the whole hiking, national parks, backpacking. I wasn't really aware of any of these things that I would ever imagine doing. And I pretty much growing up, I was athletic. I played like soccer, lacrosse. I ski raced a lot, and that's why I'm in Colorado in the winter to do that. So I guess my hobbies sort of push me to go the places that I end up. And then I have been expanding what I like to do slowly now that I'm an adult. But yeah, I've always sort of kind of been athletic and just didn't really know what the whole, like everything in the United States and the world had to offer until I got older. And I keep finding out new things I want to do.
Okay. And so you grew up in Massachusetts. How many brothers and sisters did you have? Do you have?
I have one younger brother.
One younger brother. And is he also in the medical profession?
He is not. He is a lineman for National Grid. So he works on like the power lines.
Right, right. And is he currently in Massachusetts as well?
He is. He lives just south of Boston. Okay. So he's a big boat guy. He lives like by the ocean and yeah. Big boat guy. Definitely. He was just here a few weeks ago skiing with me. So he likes it, or he snowboards, but he came out.
Okay. Now you mentioned earlier a camper. Mm-hmm. Are you traveling the country as a travel nurse in a camper?
So that was my idea when I got it. I took the camper up to Maine. I worked up in Maine for a little bit. So I did that this past summer. I lived in my camper, which was awesome. Before that, I did like a little road trip to test it out because I like sold my old one. I had an old one I used a couple times, but was not for me. So I bought this newer one, did a little road trip around New York because New York wasn't really a state I'd been to, just to like tow the camper and just use everything in it before I commit to living in it. And I gave myself a little 2-day buffer to get myself up to Maine and went up to Maine and lived in it. I plan on living in it more and traveling. I was actually going to go instead of New York, I was going to go to Yosemite and the Tetons and visit there because I've never been there. But then, you know, that little mudslide thing happened this summer. Yeah, so that sort of put a damper on those plans. But my plans this summer to do more stuff like that. I would have loved to bring it out here, but a little cold. And it's definitely not a four-season camper.
But tell us about the camper. Is it like a motorhome or
a travel trailer? So it's like 24 feet and I pull it behind my truck. Has like one bed in it. You can pull the couch out, has a little kitchenette, bathroom, shower. So I like fully can live in that totally fine.
And so when you went up to, you said Maine, right? You went up to Maine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When you went up to Maine with the travel trailer,
mm-hmm.
and you lived in the travel trailer, where would you park it?
I parked it at a campground. So I lived in a campground just to have utilities, and pretty much I needed really AC for the dogs because they were in there when I was at work, and it was the middle of summer, so it could get pretty hot, and trailers like a tin can. So mm-hmm. I needed that. And then the way travel nursing works and you get paid, you need to like duplicate your living expenses, and what you pay to live in a campground suffices for that, and you know, the whole IRS that can get in the way.
Got it. So, now what type of nursing did you get involved with? Do you have a specialty?
Yeah, I'm an ER nurse. I have a little
ER nurse. Wow.
Yeah. I have a little side job in the ICU, but mainly an ER nurse.
Okay. So I'm sure as an ER nurse, you've seen a lot of things come through the ER.
Yes, definitely a lot of things, but those paramedics clean them up and they make them nice and pretty, pretty-ish for us.
Pretty-ish.
Yeah, as pretty as they can make some things.
Okay. Now, without violating HIPAA, you know, what, don't name any names. Don't give, you know, too many identifying details, but what are some of the worst things that you've seen come through the ER?
Well, then that makes it really hard for the identifying details, but probably like I've, you know, like seen some brains, some eyeballs pop out. Things of that nature are pretty intense that I've seen. Yeah. So those things I don't want to ever be able to see, you know, these need to stay inside the body. Those are bad. So they come to us. But yeah, those things are, it gets a little gory.
Yeah. Now forgive my ignorance, but if an eyeball pops out, I mean, is it able to be put back in?
It kept suctioning itself back in and it would like do it itself. Yeah.
It was still functional afterwards?
I'm not too sure. That went to a higher level of care, and yeah.
Yeah. Emergency room medicine is kind of like being a junior high principal. You only have them for a short period of time, and
yes.
Then you move them on to the high school. You move them on somewhere else.
Yeah. I don't know what happens with them. I see these things and then I like try to patch them up more and we try to fix the problem real quick and we fix the emergencies and then send them wherever they need to go.
Yeah. You're kind of addressing maybe some low level stuff that people come to the emergency room, but they really didn't need to come to the emergency room, or you are taking care of some major trauma, trying to stabilize stuff and move them on to where they can get more help.
Yes, pretty much. That's what we do. Okay. That is a perfect explanation of that.
Oh, good. Hey, all right. All right. This is not just a hiking podcast. We also talk medicine here.
Yes.
I'm sure one of my listeners is going to write in, send me an email about whether or not an eyeball still works after, you know, coming out and going back in. I don't know. That seems very disturbing.
I'm sure on Google they can probably give you some very nice videos of it. There's everything on there. So
that's right. You know, Em, I grew up in a time when everybody did not have the entire world's knowledge in their pocket on a smartphone. You know, when I was a teenager, we used to have to look stuff up. We used to have to, we could have arguments with each other as teenagers tend to do. And, you know, we couldn't fact check them in real time. We would have to just, you know, agree to disagree without being able to prove the other person wrong.
Oh, geez. That's not a thing anymore.
No. I mean, literally anything you want to know, you can find out in an instant. I mean, there's not a whole lot of hard work to that.
No, it's a good thing and a bad thing. Definitely.
Okay. Now, what are your ultimate goals with nursing and medicine?
I like being a bedside nurse, and I'm pretty much doing what I have always wanted to be doing. With nursing, my whole dream was to go to a place where I can ski and work and just have an awesome winter. And I'm literally have been living my dream the past 3 months, and this is it. This is what I wanted to do. So I gotta figure out what I want to do next.
All right. So take us through the typical week of M, the ER nurse.
So like this week, I tried to pack in a bit more because I actually move home next week. So what did I do? Sunday, I definitely, I'm actually gonna pull in my calendar because I can't remember. They all mesh into one. When I worked, I don't know. Let's see. Yeah. Okay. So Sunday I worked. Monday, I worked until 1 a.m. So I slept in a little bit Monday. And then that was a pretty slow day for us. I brought the dogs on a hike and we just went like to the park next door and made dinner. Pretty slow day. Tuesday, I skied at Winter Park. Wednesday, I worked again until 1 in the morning. So Thursday, I slept in again. And then we drove a little bit further. We went up to Boulder County and hiked El Dorado Canyon State Park. So we did a pretty cool hike up there, and it was way colder than I anticipated. And then today I skied at Copper Mountain, and tomorrow I go back to work.
Okay. So how many days a week do you actually work usually?
3, and I can pick up. I'll pick up overtime, like for another 4th,
right?
12 hours if I want.
Yeah. So the nurse in my family is my oldest daughter. She is a labor delivery nurse.
Oh, that's so terrifying.
Similar schedule. She worked. Yeah. Terrifying. When she was living at home with us, she would tell stories. I'm like, hey, I'm eating dinner. I don't need to hear all the details.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't need to see any babies being born. Nope. They need to go right upstairs.
All right. Now, so you don't plan on living in your camper
full-time? No, maybe not right now. Mm-hmm. Right now I have another job set up back home, so I'm gonna go live in my house. A couple trips with the camper and going tenting this summer, but we'll see. I don't really know what's gonna happen after 3 months. I don't know where I'll work. I could live in it again. I could go somewhere like this where it probably wouldn't be the best choice. So we'll see. But definitely in some point in my life, whenever it happens, I do want to like live full time in the camper and just travel the country. And whenever it's time, it'll happen, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do you watch YouTube? You talk about YouTube as being instructional videos. Do you watch YouTube on van life and kind of get tips from folks out there?
I do. I try to do as much as I can on the camper, and it's not a lot, but I try to do what I can, and YouTube is where I learn how to do those things.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, after hearing from the advertisers, we're going to hear about some of your trips out west and in the Northeast. Stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Thru-hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional.
And welcome back. We're talking to Emily Latour, or as she said, just M. And we've heard about her background and what she's doing to pay for her adventures. Well, let's talk about some of your past experiences out on the trail. I know you stick mostly to day hikes. Where have you been in the U.S.? Has it just been strictly U.S. or have you gone international as well?
I have not been international. I've just been in the United States. I've been to Zion, Yosemite, right close to me is Acadia in the White Mountains. Been up to Baxter State Park where Katahdin is, Bryce Canyon, a bunch of places.
Okay. Let's start with somewhere that's pretty well known in the country, and I think that's Mount Washington. Mount Washington typically is known for some really intense weather. I think it just set the record for 110 below a few weeks ago, which is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, Mount Washington was actually the first 4,000-footer I've hiked in New Hampshire. There's 48 of them, trying to do them all. So I did that back in 2016, me, my best friend, Anna, and my dog Cooper actually hiked it with us. We hiked it in June, so it was like beautiful at the bottom. Didn't really know what we were getting ourselves into, you know. We were just like, I was probably like maybe early 20s, late teens then. So was not too sure what I was getting myself into. Definitely did not have the right gear or anything like that. I think I just wore like a sweatshirt. And we got to the top and it must have been like 30 degrees. The winds were like blowing my dog across the parking lot. It was awful how bad the weather was. But when we got to the bottom, super happy, totally forgot about what the weather was like up there. But yeah, definitely that sparked me wanting to start doing the 48 in New Hampshire, just from how awesome that felt after and how accomplished it felt. Like, we hiked Tuckerman's Ravine, which I would definitely suggest if anyone's looking to do a Mount Washington. It's difficult, but totally worth it.
Okay, now let's talk about, you said you were maybe a little ill-prepared. Let's start with your footwear. What were you wearing on your feet?
I remember I bought these shoes, and I don't know what brand they are, but there were some hiking shoes I found at, like, it's called Bob's Stores. I don't know if they're anywhere around. They're like similar to like a Marshall's or something like that.
Okay.
I think they're probably just labeled hiking shoes. And I was like, oh, these look good. Sure, I'll do that. Yeah, nope. Those got replaced real quick.
Okay. And what are you wearing now? How have you changed?
Those ones were trail runners, and I still have just done trail runners, and I'm in some Salomons right now. Mm-hmm. I really like those.
Yeah. Those are a good brand. A lot of thru hikers are wearing Salomons out there. Okay. How about, did you carry trekking poles?
No. And I still don't.
You still don't?
Nope. I've never really used trekking poles ever.
Your score just went down another 4 points. You're now at 60. What is your aversion to trekking poles?
Nothing. I don't use anything, just because usually I'm hiking with my dog. So if I'm like putting them on the leash and off the leash when people are coming and stuff, and with the poles, it would just be too cumbersome. So I just nix them all together, but I think I might need to get some soon. You know, my knees and my old age are feeling it.
Your old age. Now, how was hiking Mount Washington with your dogs?
So just one of them went with me, and he did great. He's done all my 4,000 footers with me so far. And that one, he definitely gave me a heart attack. If there's a little waterfall on your way up, and he decided to, look right over the edge of it. And but he's good. He's like hopping on all over the boulders and everything. He does great.
Okay.
He just came out of the bedroom. He knows we're talking about him.
His ears were burning. Now, how many of the 48 have you done?
I believe we've done 14. It's taking us quite a bit, but we're working. I hope to, when I'm home this summer, to kick a few more off the list.
Now, people can get pretty obsessed with the 48 4,000 footers in New Hampshire.
That's usually what I plan my vacations around. When I am doing them, I pick whatever mountains I want to hike and I find a campground near there. And we do those. Lately, I've been picking ones that are a little bit shorter for Cooper because he's getting older and I want him to do as many as he can. But yeah, some people want to do them just in the winter. They want to do it in one winter, one summer, one year. And I just working and having other things going on, this just not feasible for me. Maybe someday, but I mean, it's been how long? What, 8 years, and I'm still not even halfway through. So,
yeah. Have you heard of gridding or the grid?
No.
Isn't that where they try and climb every mountain, every 4,000 footer, in every month of the year?
Oh yes. Okay. Yeah. I've heard. Yeah, that to me, I don't know how people can do that. I have zero clue.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
Intense, yeah.
Okay. Now there's a train that goes up to the top of Mount Washington, as well as a road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frustrating as a hiker when you get up to the top that other people are up there that didn't do it the hard way.
Yes, absolutely. And it was also very tempting to take it down, but we didn't. It was very, it made me and my friend feel very good though, because we started the hike with a group that parked next to us. And when we got to the bottom, we saw them getting off the tram at the same time. And I was just like, oh, that makes us feel good. I feel athletic.
Accomplished.
Yep.
Accomplished. Now, also in the Northeast, you have Acadia National Park, right?
Yeah.
And you have some experience in Acadia?
Yeah, I've been there a few times. Very first time was probably the worst. It was 6 hours away from home. I was just still new into camping by myself, and it downpoured for 8 weeks straight. Me and my dog in a tent. And all of the food and everything I prepped to cook was on a grill outside, which I couldn't use because. So that trip got cut a little bit in half, and we drove around. There's a bunch of lighthouses up there and stuff. We saw those, but we did get up to the top of Cadillac Mountain, which was, we stay at Blackwoods Campground. I really like that one. That's one of the state campgrounds. And you can hike up to the top of the mountain. A lot of people like to do it for sunrise from that campground, which is very nice. And everywhere is just beautiful. You have the ocean right there and all the rock faces just going right into the ocean. And it's a very beautiful, eclectic Maine National Park.
Right. And you took one trip where it rained you out, and the other trip you had a little bit better luck.
Yeah. So I've done a couple trips up there. I went with my dad a couple times and his wife, and we did definitely my favorite hike would be the Beehive and Precipice trails, though. You can't have dogs on because you're hiking rungs. But they just have beautiful views of the ocean, and there's a little beach there. Definitely those are two hikes you need to knock off. And there's a pond that you can hike around, and a bunch of hikes. You can just go forever. They all connect. You can make them as long or as short as you want. And it's really great. I really like that park.
And do people camp overnight on those trails?
I haven't seen anyone camp overnight, but usually we're back before, right around dusk. So I guess people probably wouldn't be setting up camp. But everything's it's on an island. It's on Mount Desert Island. So it's not the biggest area that you can through hike. You probably could walk through the whole thing, I would imagine, in a few days or something like that. But I haven't really seen anyone do that.
Okay. And you mentioned rungs. How dicey is the rung section?
They're not too dicey. It's not too scary. No? If you can hike up a couple foot ladder, you're good.
Okay. All right. Nothing like you see often like China with these insane hiking trails where you have to clip in and you're walking on these rungs.
Yeah. No, none of that.
Okay. And you also have some experience out west.
Yeah. So we just did, I got back last May before I moved up to Maine from a trip. I went to Utah with three of my friends. Anna, the one I hiked Mount Washington with, me and her like to do a trip mostly every year to go do something, go somewhere. We've been to Yosemite. We had two other girls join us to go to Utah. We went from Vegas, we flew into and went to Zion, Bryce Canyon and back. And we did Angel's Landing, which we've wanted to hike that for a while. I've wanted to hike it since I went to Zion, like for my very first trip back in 2016. That was like, Zion was my first place I ever went to, like, and started exploring the national parks. So I really like that. It's like home.
Yeah. Tell us about Angel's Landing. Cause it's a pretty famous place and it's a pretty dangerous place, right?
It is definitely pretty dangerous, but after doing Half Dome in Yosemite, that was nothing. Absolutely. Oh, really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that gives me a good comparison because I've done Half Dome. So I haven't done Angel's Landing yet. And in fact, we were taking a trip, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, driving trip back to Colorado. And we're going to go through Utah and stop by Zion. And I told my kids, let's do Angel's Landing.
Yes.
They did a little research and they're like, no way, Dad, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
It really wasn't that bad. If it gets a little windy, that's when they have chains going up that you can hold on to. Mm-hmm. So if it gets windy, that's when you just really hold on to the chains, but was nothing compared to Half Dome. And it's only, I want to say it was around a 5 mile round trip. And just the ending of it, that's the only part that gets dicey. The rest of it.
I mean, describe it for our listeners who maybe haven't heard of Angel's Landing, haven't seen it. Don't know exactly what we're talking about here. Tell us about the path and what it looks like.
So Angel's Landing, when you first start, has a ton of switchbacks and you think you're done and you go around a corner and then they just have tighter, steeper switchbacks. And then you finally get to the top. It's another like base area where I think there's even like bathrooms there. But then you start getting to just rock faces that are just sheer and you can literally just walk right off and fall to the ground. And I don't even know how tall it is. Honestly, it's gotta be like, I don't even know. Like, do you know if that has to be like 1,000?
I don't know. I'm assuming like hundreds of feet.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so you're just walking on maybe a four foot wide path at some point that just drops down on either side, just to the ground that is hundreds of feet below you. At some points when there is an incline, you have rungs to just help you get up the step ups, but especially even when there's like groups that are passing each other, you have to just find like a sort of kind of a safe spot to get off to the side, let them pass. And then you can go up. But when you get to the top, it just opens up and you have a whole view of the whole Zion Valley. And it's definitely worth the hike. You do need a permit though, if you want to do it now this year, or I don't know when they started it. We need one this year.
Yeah. And we talked about being able to look up anything at any time. I just looked that up while you were talking and some of the drops are up to 1,000 feet.
Okay. So yeah,
I mean, it is no joke. People have died on that hike.
Yeah. I can imagine. Just even if it's rainy and you do it, or some people do it in the snow, like anytime you just slip and fall and you're just done.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend doing any kind of, unless you are an expert and you have all of the right gear, I wouldn't recommend doing any wintertime ice or snow hikes with sheer exposure like that. That's very dangerous.
Definitely not.
Yeah. And let's go back to one of my favorite topics, and that's Half Dome. I want to hear about your experience going up to the top of Half Dome, and then I'll share my experience.
Half Dome was a trip. Getting there was insane because we got our lottery the day, it would be our first day in Yosemite. And we were supposed to arrive like at a Airbnb the night before, like 10 o'clock at night. No big deal. We had a few hours of sleep. It was like an hour away. So we would have been fine. But one of my friend's connecting flights got missed. So she didn't arrive in, I want to say Fresno, I think we flew into. She didn't arrive in Fresno. She actually ended up, she missed our connecting flight to Fresno. She ended up driving from LA to Fresno. And then we drove to our Airbnb. We didn't get there till like 2 a.m. And then she, oh, both of us, we, I want to say we maybe slept 3 or 4 hours maybe. And then we started off and took off for the 16-mile hike just to get to, I will never see anything like Half Dome ever again. Just this massive rock face with the what seemed like toothpicks that just hold you. I think they're just like toothpicks in the stone that I was not prepared for. She thankfully brought us an extra pair of gloves for me because she knew I was not prepared with gloves. But I can just remember thinking, going up and holding onto the chains and just thinking like that someone on the top could slip and fall and just take us all down. And I just remember that the whole time. Cause you, I know it's not 90 degrees going up Half Dome, but it definitely feels like it. And it especially feels like it going down. And the whole time I'm just like, someone could fall and we're just all done.
Yeah. Yeah. You hit a lot of the points that, you know, that was my same experience. I had a buddy and his son who did it the summer before. And mm-hmm. you know, we got permits and for the following summer. And I asked him, hey, how was it? And he goes, oh, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, it was great.
He didn't, that's it. I mean, he didn't give me a whole lot of explanation. I heard there was cables that you use, they call them yeah. cables that you go and it's like 45 degrees. And so I'm thinking in my head, like, all right, 90. I mean, I didn't get a big reaction out of my buddy.
Yeah,
this is going to be a piece of cake. And you kind of glossed over the point about getting there, right? Because it's 16 miles round trip. So it's 8 miles,
yeah.
right? You start off with, and you're going up the Mist Trail in Yosemite, which is no joke. You're going up by Nevada Falls and climbing these huge rocks. It's quite a bit of exertion to actually get to the subdome of Half Dome, which is kind of the lower part of the mountain. You have to climb up. It's pretty severe, pretty steep. Before you get to the subdome, sitting at the bottom of the subdome is a ranger in a chair and he's checking permits. Did you have that experience too?
I did. And I was so curious, like, if do they do this 5 days a week? Like, how many days a week do you do this?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And again, the ranger, not helpful. He didn't give any explanation. It's nope. like, all right, check your permit. And he's like, all right, go ahead.
Permit.
You're on your own. You're on your own. There's no instruction. There's nobody directing traffic because there's traffic going up and there's traffic coming down. And some people have like safety gear clipped into the cables, which I had no idea about. So nope. I didn't. I didn't have gloves. And so I'm going up. These guys are coming down. It's a free for all. And I'm thinking the same thing you're thinking, that, you know, I get jostled or bumped the wrong way and that's it. It's no joke.
Yeah, it was. I think what amazed me is just, I feel like at that point in my life, I had a nicer backpack. I had good hiking shoes. And some people are doing it like with a water bottle in a hand and like they're wearing Converses. And I'm like, how did you do this?
Like, you must have taken the train.
I know, right? Like, did you just take the helicopter to the top, get dropped off, and then you just walk down? Like, it's crazy to me. I think, and the hike up to the subdome after you give them your permit, and then it's just so steep to get to the subdome. I'm like, this is it. This is great. This is done. And then you look and you're like, oh boy, okay. Just bottle up all those nerves and let's just go.
Yeah, we sat down and we just kind of watched for about 15 minutes, just kind of watched the flow of traffic and what people were doing. You know, there are boards on the ground, kind of, I don't know, lengthwise in front of you that you can step on. Yeah, you step on, but there's 15 or 20 feet in between them, right? So you step on the board and then you got to use the chains to pull yourself up. And you're right. I was told it's 45 degrees. There is no way that it's 45 degrees. It felt like it was 70 degrees at times. It felt like I was climbing straight up.
Yeah. I think a reasonable is 60, 70 degrees, 100%. It's definitely not 45.
Yeah. And then I don't know about you, but I evidently did not drink enough water on the way because I got to about 40 feet from the top and both my hamstrings and both my quads started cramping up.
Oh, gosh.
And so I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? I got nothing but open space underneath me and I've got another 40 feet to go.
You got to push through.
Yeah.
And the worst, when you get to the top and the cables stop and there's still a little incline. So like we're on all like our feet and I had my hands on the ground, like just bear crawling up to the top. Cause I was like, I don't even want to stand up yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when we went, there was an Amish group maybe that also was there. I mean, they had like, you know, long dresses on and like old time look like farmer clothes. I don't know, but they were up there and this really freaked me out because you're standing on top of Half Dome. And you know, the diving board and the sheer cliffs are on if you just get off the cables, they're off to your right or straight in front of you, right? They get up there and they decide they want to explore going down to the left, which you know is the curved humpback of the dome, which freaked me out because I'm just thinking you walk too far down that way, you just like slip over the edge.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know what happened to them, but I couldn't watch.
Hopefully you're still out there.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. But then after all the fun's done, then you get to go down the cables.
Yeah, which I think was probably more scary because I definitely remember walking, starting to go down forward. And then I was just like, nope, I got to turn around. And then I just went down backwards just because I felt like I had a better center of gravity. And you pretty much just like slid from those boards, from board to board.
Right. And if you're going down backwards and you're sliding from board to board, I mean, you don't have eyes in the back of your head. You're looking over your shoulder, trying to figure out, you know, who's behind you. But again, very easy to bump into somebody, jostle somebody. And, you know, I would have thought that there had been a ranger, you know, kind of directing traffic. You got you five guys go. Okay. And then he's going to say, hey, you guys come down. No. There's nobody directing traffic.
Go. Just send it. And it amazes me too. Like, I know people do these crazy things, but like that they are like allowing us to do that. And it's just like, they know the risk and like what all of us can happen, but they're just like, have fun. Enjoy.
Yeah. That's right. In a world where everything else is regulated, you know, you have to wear your seatbelt. If you look at your phone and you're driving by a CHP or a, you know, highway patrol, you're going to get a ticket. But yeah, go ahead, climb up those cables on a 7-degree ascent.
I know people, they like, they'll climb up El Cap and like, they'll like free solo, like they'll do that. But like, no one's regulating that. There is actually someone that is like, oh, good idea. Have fun. Just letting it happen. That to me was amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of terrifying, but it's also, you know, part of that, you know, American spirit of being able to go out and explore and do stuff, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, those hikes are like why I do what I do. Like I find a hike that sounds like awesome, gotta go do that one, then we pick the next one, gotta go do that one, and just keep on going.
Yeah. Any other great Yosemite experiences that people should try out?
We actually, the next day, I believe, after we did that, we just like drove by because, you know, our legs were screaming. We just drove around Glacier Point, which is beautiful. And then we also went, I want to say like, forget what it is, but they had all the redwoods, the giant trees. You could like hike through that. And there was a little walking path. And then we also hiked Yosemite Falls, which was fantastic. That was definitely, I think that was our last day in Yosemite. We did that. And that was just an incredible hike because, I mean, there's no waterfalls like that in Massachusetts. We got like 4-foot waterfalls. So just to see these great, like probably 1,000-foot waterfalls is insane. And I'm hundreds of feet away and getting soaked by them. Like I was not expecting that.
Okay, Emily, I've got something for you. When you have a 3-week break, you can apply for a permit that starts in Happy Isles, just in Yosemite, and heads south for 211 miles.
Okay.
And it ends up on top of Mount Whitney. It's called the John Muir Trail.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Heard of that? Okay. So I want you to look that up and study that. That is a great... If you're gonna start through hiking, that would be a great start.
That will be on my list, definitely.
It's epic, definitely epic. All right, how about? I mean, you're in Colorado now. How much hiking have you done in Colorado?
We've done some day hikes, just around here and there, just around my skiing schedule. That was pretty much the reason I came out here. So I wanted to do that. But like, I think honestly, the best one I did was yesterday's, that El Dorado Canyon. We did like Rattlesnake Gulch and just beautiful views. There was like a continental divide outlook. So you can see it's just massive everywhere, massive mountains. It's been amazing out here. I don't want to leave.
And you said you're going back to Massachusetts for a job?
Yeah.
What is it? Is it nursing?
Yep. Yeah. It's a travel job. You can do local travel jobs. It's okay. It works a little bit different. But I got a job there for 3 months. So I'll live at home for a bit, which I'm very excited about because I haven't for like 9 months. Mm-hmm. So.
Now with travel nursing, they make more per day than just your regular nurse in a hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're also responsible for your own benefits.
Yep. Yeah. Usually we don't get benefits. Sometimes you get some, like usually they'll offer retirement or they'll offer, health insurance. It's sometimes not the greatest. It depends. There's like a bunch of agencies out there. So it depends which one you work for. And then also the main reason why we make more is to offset our living costs. Cause out here, like I have a mortgage back home. I have to pay for housing out here. I pay for a condo. So it's pretty much to pay for that, to pay for your travel out here. I think it's not listed in our contract, but I think there's a little minor inconvenience fee from being, you know, 2,000 miles away from home and everything. But I have definitely, I think, found the joy in it and really have, I think, gotten the most out of what I can out here. I've done seen a bunch of things that I never even thought existed. And I went up to the Rocky Mountain National Park. I didn't do any hikes. I want to do a couple of them, but every day that I have planned to go do that, it's snowstorming and probably not the best thing to go out there by myself, I would think. And then like I live right near Red Rocks, which is pretty cool. And been down to Garden of the Gods. Everyone should always check that out too. That is beautiful.
Yeah. I've been there myself. That is very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Big demand for travel nursing.
There was like during COVID, I think because a bunch of people were getting away from bedside and a little bit after COVID, but now it's starting to die down a bit. The rates that places are offering aren't as much. And there's just not a lot of hospitals I've noticed, I think, are getting away from using travel nurses, which that's their choice. And it is, but I don't know who's going to work because mm-hmm. everyone wants to be a travel nurse now, which I don't blame them. Yeah. I love it.
a lot of upside to being a travel nurse. I mean, look at everything yes. you've seen and been able to experience. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, is it ER medicine that you're going back to in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Is that where you want to stay? ER?
Yeah, I'll probably do that. Yeah. I work in a children's ER right now, and then I'm going to go back to a critical access ER, which is just like a small ER that we stabilize and usually transfer out.
Got it. Got it. All right. What's the next big adventure for Just M?
I think I'm going to tackle the overnight hikes. There's a couple this summer. My boyfriend Bennett has done them. So we're going to do it together. And there's a couple of those 4,000 footers up in New Hampshire that are like 30 plus miles, I think, or you can make 30 plus miles. So hopefully knock a couple of those off my list. We have a tenting trip up in Vermont planned this summer, as well as we're going to go back to Acadia too.
Okay. Sounds like an exciting jam-packed summer.
So very excited to get back home.
All right. Hey, Just M, do you know where we are?
I don't know where the picture in the back of your thing is, but I don't know where that is. I'm in Colorado.
Well, the picture behind me, that's in the Sierras. That is Evolution Lake right off of the John Muir Trail.
Oh, perfect. I will see that soon.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. But actually where we are.
The pro tip insight of the week.
Yes, that's right, Half Calf. It is time for Just M to tell us some of her trail wisdom to share with our listeners to make sure their next outdoor experience is even better. So what do you have for us? Any advice?
I think if you want to do something, you just got to go do it. Because everyone's going to tell you not to, not the right time. You shouldn't do that yet. Like, you just got to go do it, whatever it is. If it's a day trip you want to do, if it's moving 2,000 miles away from your friends and your family, you just got to do it because it's just going to make for the best adventure.
Yeah, there are always plenty of reasons why not to do something.
Yes, there are.
For the perfect time, the perfect conditions, for this or for that. And if you're always waiting for all those conditions to clear up or to be satisfied, you'll never go. So you just have to pull the trigger and get yourself out there.
That's a great
piece of advice. All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Emily. I want to thank her for joining us this week. Em, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
So I actually started a blog this summer, so they can catch me on my blog that I've been give it a little bit because I'm figuring everything out on my own. But it's called Explore RN, like registered nurse. So explorern.com. And then my Instagram too is explorern with an under dash. So they can usually try to keep those pretty updated.
Nice. And what do you include on your blog?
I've been doing like all the adventures that I've been doing, the road trip out here. We did a road trip in the fall to North Carolina. So just what we've been doing on those, try to attach like day trips. I did a little segment like day trips from Denver where like if people are traveling out here, they can go do and ideas of thing activities to do. So we're sort of kind of, and also like tips on like how I travel with my dogs because they come everywhere with me and it's a little difficult to do sometimes, but want to spread some wisdom on how to make that a little bit easier.
Nice. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have any comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmirror@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
And before we wrap things up, I've got another section for you called the Adventure Media Recommendation. This is where we're looking for you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some kind of adventure media to keep our listeners connected to the trail. What do you have for us? Any recommendation?
Yeah. So actually the book that introduced me to hiking and all this stuff is Wild by Cheryl Strayed, and definitely my favorite book. I know it's probably a popular one. I don't know if someone else has said it, but read the book first. I know there's a movie out there, but definitely the book is well written.
I think the movie in particular and the book helped with an explosion on the trail. I think numbers really went up on the PCT after that came out.
Yep. That, and then I read this past summer, Odyssea, and that's about hiking, or actually trail running, the Appalachian Trail.
I'll have to check that one out. I haven't heard about that one.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. I like that.
Okay.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What do we miss tonight?
I think maybe one of the other most awesome hikes I ever went on was probably Knife's Edge on Mount Katahdin. So it just goes right to the end of your AT hike, but Knife's Edge is definitely something that everyone that's hiking the AT or just, I hiked just Katahdin for the day trip and definitely should do that one.
Did you run into any thru hikers finishing up?
No, I didn't. I was a little sad.
Wrong time of the year?
Yeah, we did it in July, I want to say. So probably a little bit too early.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, that is a wrap from the John Freaking Muir Studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Emily?
I think, well, shout out to my adventure partner, Bennett, my boyfriend. So he's been helping me, supporting me, doing everything I want to do. He's back in Massachusetts and cheering me on, doing whatever I want to do out here.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. Doesn't care if you want to go downhill. Doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.